Welcome to the TSD Spotlight. I'm Kevin Carroll, Executive Director of Tech San Diego. I'll be your host today, coming to you from the new temporary global headquarters of Tech San Diego in sunny Rancho Penasquitos in San Diego. We have a great show today. We are going to catch up with Congressman Scott Peters. Congressman, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
I want to explain this so I don't get accused of being disrespectful, but I've known Scott for almost 20 years. Scott and I served on we had a subcommittee to lessen traffic coalition or traffic congestion for Sorrento Valley. And Scott was a big part of that, but that's where I first met Scott. So if I lapse into calling Scott by his first name or say Scott, it's certainly not a form of disrespect. It's just I've known the congressman for a long time, so I slip into that familiar mode once in a while. I hope that's okay, Congressman Peters.
It's totally fine. If you're old enough to vote, you should call me Scott.
Sounds good. Scott, we have a short amount of time, so I'm going to jump right in it. We're going to talk about how some of the companies have been affected by this crisis. But I've been really curious, how is this affecting like your day-to-day work schedule in Congress? Are you guys using more technology? Tell us a little bit about how it's affecting Congress.
Yeah, well, so it's been very interesting. So we're obviously all sheltered in place. We're all trying to avoid getting on an airplane again. I think we probably will have to at least make one more trip. One of the things we found out is that, you know, those of us who I came into Congress in 2013, but even after 2001, September 11th, they never came up with a procedure for remote voting, even in an emergency. So there's actually the ability to force a quorum call, which would mean 218 members of Congress have to show up. And then if they call for a voice vote, potentially more people would have to show up. And we think that's a shortcoming. So a lot of us are trying to get a technology solution to that. In the meantime, while we're not going back to DC, which we're used to, we're doing a lot of, you know, trying out new technologies. Most of the caucus calls have been phone calls. And there's just a lot of effort to remind people to unmute their phones. And, you know, it's a hard thing. A lot of our folks are older. Some of them aren't older, but they act older. And they're just not comfortable with even rudimentary technology. So we're trying to figure out at the same time, how can we conduct committee hearings via one of these platforms? We're meeting a lot with constituents via Zoom and GoToMeeting and whatever the technology platforms are. And I find that just because of the nature of what's happening, there's not a lot of free time. The blank space on the calendar tends to get filled up with people asking questions. But we're using all sorts of technology from the telephone up to these multi-user video platforms. I think that might be the way of the future, but I think Congress is going to be slow to change fundamentally.
Well, I have to tell you, Scott, that your office has been very, very responsive. We've had a couple of issues come up, and starting from Marianne Pintar down to some of your staff, you've done a really great job in at least helping Tech San Diego and Innovation Economy stay on top of things. You were one of the first offices we called to get resources. It was a little frustrating. We had companies that wanted to help, and what was really frustrating is not having that path, right? There was this lack of centralization, and you could still say there still is. We're a town of small and mid-sized technology companies, and a lot of those folks wanted to help, and there's really no path to that. And, you know, it would seem that harnessing, again, smaller innovation companies would have been something the country should have been able to tap into. I know some of the large guys got a lot of the press, Ford and GM, but there was a lot of capacity on the small mid-size that has not to this date been tapped into.
We're sort of seeing the acceleration of a phenomenon we have had a problem with for a long time, which is how do you get these innovators in San Diego? And a lot of them are in defense, but a lot of them are in biotechnology or technology. How do you get them to be known to be important to the federal government? And got a huge geographic challenge with that, but also it's a huge challenge with respect to letting them know that we know a better way to solve your problem. One thing that the Defense Department has started to do is to solve, instead of bidding for platforms or putting out bids for platforms, they put out bids for solutions. So describe the problem, not the equipment that you want, the problem that you want solved. That's a little bit of a start. But in the immediacy, in the moment of this COVID crisis, it's a challenge for a bureaucratic any bureaucratic entity to change. But for the federal government, it's been really difficult. And I think that's why you see, frankly, a lot of the states and localities taking the leadership on the issue anyway.
And maybe, you know, I'm sure there'll be a lot of lessons learned about how we attack the next one. But it was really disappointing. And I think you put it right about the lack of understanding about the innovation within small, mid-sized companies and solution. You know, when I was talking to your office, one of the things I suggested is just a central repository for POs. You know, there's so much money out there for solutions and just having people starting to attack them. But we'll see what happens. So we've seen this first round of funding come out on the CARES Act. I know I've been talking to a lot of members. There's a little bit of mixed response to a lot of that. Thought it was a good idea and the payroll protection, but when it comes to the implementation and actually getting in the queue, a lot of it was dependent upon your relationship with your banker, what bank you were working with. Some banks did better than others. So as we look to the next round, how are we going to make sure that more companies are able to take advantage of it and that, you know, it may not be totally dependent upon your banking relationship, but, you know, rather these are federal funds.
Right. Well, there's another program. The Emergency Loan Program goes directly through the Small Business Administration. But again, some banks are familiar with them already, too. So I do think that we've learned a little bit about implementation here. One thing we've learned, too, is that, you know, there's got to be some accounting and some make sure that the right people are getting loans. I heard that Ruth's Chris got $20 million. And once you start, if you're starting to dole out these $10, $20, $30 million grants to some of the bigger companies, the smaller ones, you have, you know, a payroll that's maybe, you know, a few tens of thousands of dollars, they're really going to get squeezed out. And so we're trying to do our best to make sure the administration's trying to do their best to make sure that the banks are comfortable with it. We have to get back and refund it, you know, put more money into it. The other thing is in my caucus, the New Dems, the sort of pro-growth Democrats, a lot of us are supporting an idea of automatic triggers so that if the program starts to run out of money, economic conditions are the same or deteriorated based on GDP or unemployment, that money would automatically go into the programs until the need was met without Congress having to meet again. So that would both take care of the logistical problem that I talked about before, but also would give some certainty to the economy that it wasn't a race. And I think that's been difficult for some people too. They think if they didn't win the race, they're not going to get anything. Well, you know, we're going to keep at it and make sure people get the help that they need.
And you know, the companies, the larger companies, obviously have more resources, right? And so they're going to be first in line. So I think it's very observant, and especially Scott, if you look at the companies that you represent in your district, they're full of small and mid-sized technology companies. You know, figure anywhere from $5 million revenue companies all the way up to about 100 million. Those make up a big preponderance of the type of companies we see in San Diego. So I think it's especially important for the companies that you represent.
Right. We hear both people who are, you know, in the 100 employee range, quite a bit away from the $500 employee limit. We also heard a few concerns from some companies with just over 500 employees. They're not going to be helped like an airline will be helped, but they're also not qualifying for the PPP. So we've got to deal with that kind of dead zone as well.
Yeah, one of the issues we heard, and this affects Tech San Diego, you know, 501c6s weren't included with some of those. And, you know, I think as you look at business associations and chambers, those could really be accelerants as we come out of that. So hopefully those will be able to be included as well. Scott, is there any initiatives that you've been taking a lead on or advocating for? Is there a space that you're kind of occupying with this crisis that would be interesting for listeners of the podcast?
We are doing this. I've been trying to help lead the effort to do automatic triggers so that we can provide some certainty to the economy that I described before. We've also got a couple of healthcare initiatives. One is one to help make sure that we don't see premiums jump, that it would be a form of helping deal with high cost cases that come up. We don't want to see premiums jump in the middle of this crisis for the extra costs added because hospital availability is so difficult. So we're working on something in the nature of our reinsurance program. That's my bill. And I think probably has a shot at getting in there too. And then we're going to be looking at sort of the fiscal impacts. Now is not the time to worry about the fiscal state of the nation. In fact, one of the more dangerous things we could do is stop borrowing money before we get out of this trough. We have to get people through this. But then I think we have to turn to making sure that we get on a more sustainable fiscal path. And we're hoping that, you know, without slowing this effort down, that when we get to the end of it, that we will all agree that let's figure out what's sustainable here and how to make sure that we fund the things we need, the investments America needs, the support that people need in a way that's more sustainable than it has been.
And I think, you know, there's the unintended consequences. We just don't know yet, right? So I think we'll be addressing what's happening now for years to come, whether that's how we're going to, you know, fiscally pay for this to, you know, things that haven't happened yet on kind of unintended consequences. We talked about it earlier, but I want to return to something. We talked about small, mid-sized tech companies in the fight. Is there anything that we can do to, obviously the life science companies are working on it, but what as a community do you think, does San Diego have any kind of a role that we should be playing that we're not, or keep on doing what we're doing? What are your thoughts on, you know, what should be San Diego's role in fighting this horrible thing?
Well, being San Diegans, people are really trying to think about how to solve the problem. So I've heard discussions about contact tracing, how we might leverage the expertise at places like Qualcomm and also at UCSD Medicine to come up with a way to make sure that we can get the economy moving again as we ease back into it in a way that's really smart. We've got companies, a number of companies in bio who are involved in developing a vaccine and antibodies. The La Jolla Institute of Immunology was hired by the Gates Foundation, funded to the tune of, I think, $1.7 million to kind of be the judge of these various proposals to do antibody testing and even treatment. So a lot of people are involved in the game. I guess I would say, the thing that we can do that's more common is to make sure that we're taking care of each other. Another thing that San Diego is pretty good at is, you know, coming together and helping people out. So I've seen a lot of that too, you know, people volunteering to get groceries for the older couple next door, that kind of thing too. All those things are helpful. But in terms of tech, I mean, I think people are thinking how to solve problems and they're involved in it. I've heard a couple of proposals too of apps that would help track the disease and make sure that we're, you know, catching up with people who've been exposed and see if we can't get out of this problem faster rather than slower.
We've seen, you know, COVID-19 kind of decimate, you know, our economy, at least in the short term, and some other things. You talked a little bit about some things, but just kind of switching tones a little bit. What do you think is going to emerge positively from this experience? You know, I've noticed, for one, people are, and it sounds cliche and it might sound kind of cheesy, but people are being nicer to each other. I mean, I notice it on my phone calls. I notice it on my go-to meetings. I notice it talking to my neighbors. So there is certainly seem to be a better sense of community. Maybe this could translate into what Congress is doing. But from your kind of view, what's going to emerge positively out of this?
I do think that we have a little bit more humility about our control over everything. And that makes people nicer to one another. Maybe they'll be more patient with one another. I do also think that we've all been forced to explore these technologies, these work from home technologies that may give more flexibility to the workplace. I do think that we also see when the role is for actually talking to people face to face. You know, I think maybe we will have sorted out what's appropriate for the workplace in a way that's maybe new and innovative. And I think we'll also really value, you know, the experience that we may take for granted of being able to go out to a restaurant. I think that's going to be something that we all value again someday soon, I hope.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing a Padres game with you, Scott, in the very near future.
Yeah, really.
So I know this is just we just wanted a quick interview with Scott just to check in with him. Just a couple of questions. Are there long-term implications about how the government operates? One of the things, and I'll put in a kind of my personal bias here as well, you know, no one wants the feds until they need them. And I think, you know, the idea of competent managers and folks running our government is needed now more than ever. But are there any long-term implications of how government operates or even the perception of how government operates?
Well, I don't want to get too political, but I would just remind folks that, you know, these elections, they're job interviews. And I think sometimes we treat them as celebrity contests. You know, who's the celebrity that I like the best? Who do I want to have a beer with? But these are job interviews. And I would say that, you know, now we've seen, I think, the importance of these jobs that some of us take for granted. Anthony Fauci, you know, is one of the great virologists in the world. And we're fortunate he's on the federal payroll. You know, there's people of great competence throughout the federal government, in the State Department, and in the Defense Department, who help keep us safe in a way that's really smart and strategic. And, you know, the president of the United States is a management job and someone who needs to appreciate kind of where we're strong, where we're not strong, what the coming threats are, and make sure that we're matching our resources to those things. And so I just remind people that that these elections are where you get to choose who runs your government. We just hope we've all learned a little bit about the importance of some of these roles that we may not even have known about, let alone take for granted. So I hope that there's a change in people's perception. And then I would also say Congress has to find a way to modernize. And I think that that's going to happen as well.
Scott, thank you very much for checking in with Tech San Diego. Before we let you get back to the important work of government, is there anything else we missed or anything that we could be helping you with as you provide our voice, innovation economy? I know your district is filled with technology companies. Is there anything else we could do for you?
Well, I appreciate that. I just refer people to my website for information about these programs and how to get access to these resources. Your folks tend to be pretty savvy about that, but that information's up there. And if we could be helpful, you should let us know. But also, if there's specific ways you think that these programs should be fixed, there's a lot of appetite for input on that right now. And so if you have specific ideas about what might work better, I think being in touch with us would be really helpful to us and everyone.
All right, Congressman Peters, thanks for checking in. When we get to the other side of this, we'll do a little longer podcast, a lot of other issues that we didn't delve into. But I know you have a busy schedule, and I'm going to let you get back to the work of governing, and we'll get back to the work of providing the voice of technology, and we will see you in the very near future.
Thanks, Kevin. Take care. Be safe.
Major thanks to Representative Scott Peters and his staff for taking the time to talk with Kevin. The Tech San Diego Spotlight is edited by Andrew Sims at Hypable Impact. Without him, we wouldn't sound quite as good. Don't forget to like, subscribe, share, and if you're feeling up to it, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.